The Quality Shares podcast is sponsored by Sharepad, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders.
Hello and welcome back to the Investability podcast. I am John Heumann, co-founder of Investability, joined again by my co-host Michael Taylor of Shifting Shares. How are you doing, Michael?
Hi, John. Good, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Been busy today updating the Quality Shares portfolios, the Investability portfolios. For January, and it was pretty horrible. Needed a stiff drink after that. They've not done too well. You can read that on the site. But US tech really gave the Atlantic portfolio a beating, as you'd expect. It's been a pretty horrible month for the Nasdaq, and actually quality shares that the UK portfolio focused on have also had a beating. And I think mostly the problem is that valuation has really seen a lot of people starting to take profits.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, you've got to take profits at some point. And when people start selling and see other people start selling, usually it's a compounded effect. And PayPal, if you look on the 20th of October on the chart, you can see it fall through the 200 EMA on big volume. And that big volume just keeps going. And someone's hammering the stock out, or several people are. And then there's a profit warning today. So people say you shouldn't look at charts, but you know, if someone had looked at that chart, you could easily see someone exiting.
Yeah, well, yeah, or shorting, as I think.
Or shorting, yeah.
I mean, I think that was that's really interesting. I think, and I mentioned this in the sort of blurb around last week's podcast. That actually, you know, although your approach, as we discussed last week, is much more around trading, and mine is much more around sort of long term buy and hold, there's actually a lot we can learn from each other here. And
definitely.
You know, looking at charts and the things, the clues that they offer, and you know, in the case of PayPal here, that volume was a clue, you know, are very useful to long-term investors. We actually bailed on PayPal when Amazon and Visa had their spat at the end of last year.
Well done.
Yeah, well, you know, we Visa has bounced back because that dispute has been resolved. But PayPal looked the weakest of the payments providers to us at the time. And actually some of that was based on our own personal experience of choosing a payment provider for our site. You know, we went with Stripe. I think you did the same.
Yeah. So I used to have PayPal and it was absolute rubbish. And I can't understand why you wouldn't use Stripe. Yeah. Stripe is just by far the best.
Yeah. PayPal is, it is widely used, but it is a clunky old thing. And, you know, just goes to show that, you know, not all tech is, it's built the same, and that actually within the tech industry, you know, something that's been an established technology can be superseded pretty damn quickly. Having said that, the Nasdaq has been absolutely ripping this week. Have you been having a little dabble?
I have not. No, I rarely trade indices, and I had my FTSE 250 short on last week, which got stopped out, so I'm fully long again.
Excellent. Well, I mean, the Nasdaq has been you know, absolutely belting, and it's largely thanks to you know, big tech. You know, Microsoft, Apple had some really fantastic numbers, which we mentioned last week. Google today has had some really good numbers, and has announced a quite significant stock split, 20-20 for 1. I wanted to talk to you about this because what a lot of people are talking about is how this you know, splitting a stock into much more digestible chunks actually has a really powerful psychological effect that can actually, you know, draw buyers in. Is this something you've noticed before?
Yeah, I have seen it before. I think it happened with Tesla. I would need to check the chart, but I have read that this is a phenomenon, and people anchor the actual price to the previous price and think it's cheap. And I remember there was a stock, there is a stock on AIM called Braveheart, ticker Bravo Romeo Hotel. And the stock went ex-dividend by a big amount because the largest shareholder paid and director paid a huge dividend. And you would have thought that the stock would have stayed down, but instead people piled in because they thought the stock was cheap. And it actually rallied almost to the price that it was the day before when it was ex-dividend. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, it's crazy to think that things like that exist, but yeah.
I mean, it just goes to show something I've talked about a lot, which is, you know, the psychological, the power of psychology in markets. You know, I think it's underestimated. And this, you know, it's the same company. Why does splitting the stock make it, you know, any more attractive? Who knows? The other strange thing I saw the other day was actually how well US shares perform after hours compared to what they do during the day. So you obviously, you know, that you get sort of late release news and then the after hours trading, and actually it has significantly outperformed the market when it's open. This is a crazy phenomenon. But there you go. What else has been? The Nasdaq has obviously been recovering somewhat. I think lots of people are piling back into what you might call the trash, the stonks that we discussed last week. Seen a bit of that in London as well. Yeah, big bounce this week has been Scottish Mortgage, which I know lots of people hold. It's had a horrible year, mainly on worries and actually the falling share price of some of its holdings. Moderna was its biggest holding, and Tesla. I mean, Tesla, I still can never get my head around what's going on with this company.
Me neither, but I'm also not going to say anything bad about it because I like my life, so let's leave it at that.
That's absolutely fair enough. Anything on the RNS that's caught your eye this week?
So I've been on holiday this week, so I've read the RNSs, and that's been pretty much it. But yeah, I can see IG had results, which look okay at first glance, but I'm not an owner of the stock. But given that most of my trading accounts are actually with IG, I should probably pay attention. But that is just a fantastically profitable business, judging by the amount of commission that I pay. And there's no real competition in the UK for stock trading, leveraged stocks. There's a couple, but it's just by far the best.
Well, you've got Plus500. Have you ever used them?
That's the funny thing. So with these outside brokerages, like CMCX, Plus500, I don't know a single person who's ever used them, but they clearly have customers.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is that there's quite a lot of churn that goes on in their customer base. It's almost like a marketing machine, getting new customers in all the time, as kind of people essentially, trade, bust, leave. IG strikes me as a bit more of a kind of solid business than that. My worry about something like IG is that, I mean, you know, you would expect, brokerages, trading platforms to have had a good few years. I mean, it's been crazy. You know, the markets have been flying, lots of new people in, as we've discussed recently. I guess my question there would be, how long does it last?
Yeah, I think there's been a significant tailwind for IG and these companies. And if I look at the numbers to my own website, they've been in decline, even though I've been putting more content onto the site. The numbers have been going down, and that's just interest has been declining. After the big volatility spike in 2020, which sort of carried on through to early 2021, I think since then the volatility has calmed down and traders have left, and or maybe they've all gone to crypto.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, the shares are very cheap. So if you look at them on SharePad, forecast PE just over 11, which seems really, really cheap. But I guess that's reflective of the fact that it is very cyclical in terms of, you know, the market cycle.
Yeah, and they bought Tasty Trade recently in the US. But I think the US is a much bigger market. People seem to love stocks there, whereas here it seems to be quite a rarity. You know, a few years ago, if you said you dealt in stocks in the pub, you'd have zero friends. Now it's a different story.
I must admit, I still don't meet many people who are actually actively investing or trading. You know, I guess in America, you know, yeah, people have much more responsibility for their own pension planning through their 401k. So it is a cultural difference, I think. So perhaps a good move for IG to get over into the US.
Maybe. I guess we'll see.
We shall see. Jules, we noticed, had some numbers out. This is another one where we looked at the chart, and it's been a near constant downward journey. And they had a profit warning earlier in the year, I think you mentioned.
Yeah, it was a couple of months back. They had a profit warning, wasn't short them, didn't short them, haven't touched them. But yeah, I would never have taken a long position in that because of the chart. And also, if there's a profit warning, it's not really ideal, is it? Unless the problems can all be fixed super quick. But how often does that happen? I mean, there's one that we also talked about, Avon, that's taken a clattering. But yeah, Jules, you know it's bad when they say they're cutting marketing spend in order to save money. I mean, if that's profitable spend, profitable customer acquisition and you're cutting down on the spend, that means lower profits in the future.
Very, very short term. I would agree with that. I mean, it's a funny old business. It's one that funnily enough, I mean, it's where I live in the middle of nowhere. It's quite hard to go shopping. But actually, Jules is one of the few places where you can buy clothes around here because we're next to the seaside. And it's very much this sort of country set, you know, London on sea or Chelsea on sea, as they used to call it, crowd that shop there. But I never really felt that it had particularly broad appeal. And I guess that's starting to really show up in trading now.
Well, I've never been in one.
No, I've walked past it a few times, but that's about it.
I do all my clothes shopping online because it's just easier.
We'll come on to that because we're gonna have an in-depth look at the fast fashion retailers very shortly. The other, you mentioned Avon. They had a trading update this week, which suggests things are getting back on track there after a series of profit warnings, which has ultimately led to the decision to close its protection business, its body protection business. Things sound like they're getting back on track, but you know, this sounds like a pretty long turnaround. Is that a situation that would tempt you in?
The problem is when stocks are well off the highs, you've always got people who have grimly held on, and as that stock rallies, they like to sell into them and get their money back or cut some of the losses. The beauty when a stock goes through all-time highs is that literally everyone is in profit. Everyone's happy. Everyone is making money. People buy in. There's a nice trend. People buy things that are going up. Whereas when it's on the way down, it's a completely different story. And you've got people who are looking to sell the rallies rather than buy the dips. It's just a complete switch in mentality.
I
would just avoid it.
The companies that are making 52-week highs at the moment tend to be in the banking and utility sector. It's you know, the real sort of inflation sensitive stuff that's going to benefit from rising interest rates or defensive stuff. So, yeah, that makes sense. A lot of nervousness around the markets generally, and I guess companies that have a checkered track record are going to struggle for a while. Actually, we had our portfolios, and one of the reasons why they didn't do so well in January. Because we had an update from James Housted, which makes flooring products. And it's basically talking about essentially supply chain problems still. You know, difficulties getting raw materials, difficulties getting staff, difficulties passing on rising freight costs to its customers, and profits will be impacted as a result.
And this is where I think you've got to have a fundamental edge because you need to really know that you're judging it wrong when everyone else has oversold it.
If you were looking at the chart of something, you know, that had fallen that heavily, what sort of techniques are you using to perhaps identify that it has perhaps been sold off a bit too hard?
So usually I would look for on the daily, maybe it's a big hammer on volume, so where the stock would fall quite heavily throughout the day, but then rise and rally into the close. So that could be like a rejection of the downtrend, but it would need to be on heavy volume to show up big buying, people coming in. But generally, I tend to avoid these because it's just like a falling knife. I mean, there was a stock last week or the week before, Advanced Energy, had a negative drill result. That just tanked, did not rally at all, and then had another bad RNS and dropped another 50% on the day. You've really got to be careful, I feel, buying into these, especially oil, speculative oil stocks. But yeah, these trades would only be if I was going to scalp a profit one, and it would be intraday and then at the end of the flat.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be one of those people hanging on grimly to James Housted for a while.
Well, let's hope you've got it right.
But, you know, it's a good business. It has great products. It's high quality. Phil wrote about it some time ago, and you know, the supply chain issues were always going to be the problem. And you know, my view would be that actually there's still a problem for lots of businesses. They're not being talked about in the way that they were, but actually, you know, supply chain tightness, I think it's still out there.
I think it's going to get worse. Yeah, and that chart that you showed me earlier suggests that I think it's going to continue as well.
Which chart was that? I can't remember. Oh,
the chart.
Yeah. The chart. Yes, yes. Cotton futures. We'll yeah. Come on. We'll come on to that. So let's just stick with this week's news. I guess there was some better news in a sector that's dear to my heart, which is premium beverages. So Fevertree, which I assume you've been enjoying while you've been out in Lanzarote.
Yeah, I think I've cleaned the resort out of alcohol-free beer. Would you believe?
So alcohol-free beer?
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. It's go to sleep easily.
Okay.
But so I've had a few whiskies, a few Johnny Walkers today, which I think is owned by Diageo.
Yes, it is. Yes, yeah. It is.
Well, you can thank me.
Yeah, indeed. But shares are up a couple of percent today. Fevertree's up 1%. But the numbers are good. You know, these are the kind of solid businesses that, you know, will recover or haven't really felt the impact of you know some of the issues that we've been seeing elsewhere in relation to the pandemic. Having said that, they look very expensive still. Fevertree is on 60 times forecast earnings.
Oh dear, yeah. I mean, the US looked like it was growing quite well, but yeah, 60 time earnings is that's not cheap, is it?
it's not. And I mean, you know, it's a decent business. You know, it's got decent returns, decent margins, but not as good as Diageo. And you know, I look at these two, and I would say, well, you know, I'll have Diageo's 30% operating margin at 26 times forecast earnings, rather than Fevertree's 20% margins at 60. You know, I mean, it's a no brainer there. I do worry that I do wonder whether I think it's like you say, companies seem to get fan clubs, and Fevertree was one of them.
It had a meteoric rise, didn't it?
It did.
A very sharp fall as well.
Well, indeed. Was it one you ever dabbled in?
I did, yeah. I shorted it a few times when it broke technical support. I think I did better on the short side than the long side, which is probably quite rare, given how many times it went up. It was a real in darling.
Yeah, absolutely. I do remember when I think it was... It was between Fevertree and Games Workshop. We're both on the up, and there were various bets as to which one would hit 40 quid first. Well, Games Workshop got there and some, and Fevertree's now half that. So,
yeah, you do tend to get fan clubs of these sort of stocks. But I mean, with Diageo, I think it does have a robust moat because it's got this huge network where it can just buy brands that are up and coming. Then plug them into all the various markets and just leverage them that way. I mean, it would be pretty hard to dislodge Diageo, and it would take quite a bit of time. And do people really switch to Sainsbury's own vodka if the heating bill's gone up? Is that really a choice that they'll make, or will they cut back elsewhere? Personally, I wouldn't, but yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. The fact that Sainsbury's premium, Sainsbury's own label vodka even exists, kind of tells you that people will buy it. And there is a cost of living crisis that's really brewing. You know, there's some really nasty stuff out there. Rising energy bills, rising petrol costs, rising housing costs. There's all sorts of nasties out there lurking. So, I think budgets will be strained. I must admit, I have bought Lidl's own brand of gin and whiskey in the past.
Was it good?
It was all right, yeah. It was all right. I mean, it wasn't as nice as premium spirits. You know, it wasn't as nice as a Tanqueray or, Bombay Sapphire, which I don't think is the Diageo. The whiskey was not, it was a single malt, but it wasn't,
Yeah, one thing with these tasting things is if you put a Fevertree and then an own brand tonic, I don't think I could taste the difference. It's more the feeling that you get when you buy a premium drink. Mm. I mean, that's my opinion. I'm sure someone will tell me I'm definitely wrong. But I mean, it has been proven. There was a study with Harvard Wine Club, and all the bottles had been switched with the less expensive wine, and these so-called wine experts believed that the actual less expensive wine was the best wine purely because it was in the more expensive bottles.
The power of packaging and marketing, eh? It's
exactly.
It's psychology.
Don't knock it. Yeah.
Psychology once again. I mean, actually, Fevertree, my worry there was that someone like Schweppes or Britvic are really going to have a pop at that market. It hasn't really happened in any meaningful way. The other risk, of course, is that the gin boom starts to wind up a bit, and you are seeing some signs of that. It was the drink a year or two ago. Definitely seems to have lost its oomph. But nevertheless, I get some good numbers. And as I say, I would much rather own Diageo, however, and I kind of do through an investment trust that I own, City of London Investment Trust. Extremely boring, just the way I like it. Actually, talking of extremely boring, Vodafone had some numbers out today, which were decent. Shares are up 3% and a bit. I guess this is a similar story to the one going on at BT. It's the activists coming on board to really try and eke out some performance from these dusty old telcos. These boring companies have been doing really well. Vodafone, BT, like I said before, are really supporting the market at the moment. And again, it's the presence of the activists that I think is really, really helping here. But hey, something to look out for. Activists can actually be good for the share price, cash machines. And I think this is what attracts the activists. And, if they can make them even more cash generative and even more, profitable by tweaking the strategy, then there's upside there. I like them. Mm. I like this sort of stories. Don't yet own Vodafone, but I'm getting tempted because I'm so boring.
ShareePad is an all-in-one platform for private investors and traders, providing in-depth data on everything from shares, funds, ETFs, and more across the UK, US, and Europe. With your subscription, you get live updates from UK Alliance News and RNS, and access to powerful stock screening and portfolio management tools. Visit shareScope.co.uk to find out more about ShearPad, and if you haven't subscribed before, you can get your second month free by using the Investability promotional code, which is the word invest.
Should we talk about fast fashion? So we haven't really had any news from this sector for a little while. There was news last year. ASOS, was it earlier this year or last year? I can't remember. Time flies. Has announced that it's moving to the main market, but it really spooked investors towards the end of last year with some pretty nasty numbers. So we've been taking a look at this. Oh, and of course you've got Boohoo and Sosandar, which is a company I don't know very well, but which I think you've been looking at. So what have you dug out about the prospects of this sector?
So Boohoo had another profit warning recently. So for me, I will just not touch that. Awful chart. Same with ASOS. And I think with these companies, if you can... And again, similar with Fevertree, if you can find them before all the institutions find them, you can ride them up. And Fevertree listed at, what was it, £1.60, got to about 40 quid. Mm. Boohoo, I think they came out with a profit warning when they listed. That was before my time. But I think the lowest they were was around 50p. So if you can find them early and ride onto them, you can really do quite well. Once they've had a profit warning, it's just, I think, an avoid. There's probably easier money elsewhere. There's 2,000 stocks on the London Stock Exchange. If you have a profit warning, is that really the best place to keep your money? I would say probably not.
I mean, I'm troubled by the sector. I mean, it doesn't feel like the highest quality. The highest quality businesses, the highest quality industry. Fast fashion has lots of concerns hanging over it. One of which you referred to earlier was the chart that I dug up, which is cotton futures, which have climbed 27% in the last. Well, I can't remember the time frame since October, and that's a big move. These companies don't operate on particularly fat margins, so the cost of manufacture is important. And, the cost of shipping, the cost of getting those goods, both into their warehouses and then out of their warehouses to customers and then back again when their customers give them all back. These are the problems this industry has. I mean, and it just feels like a mess to me. I have a quality problem with it.
Yeah, it's not an insignificant cost, is it? But my wife was actually looking for bikinis, and I think ASOS last week. and all the ones that she wanted weren't available.
Is that right?
Well, yeah.
I think that
suggests a potential availability issue. Are they not getting enough stock in?
I could see that would be possible. You know, what we know is, you know, a lot of these goods are manufactured out in Asia, places like Bangladesh or India, or even China. And we know that there are shipping issues at the moment. We know that supply chains are still log jammed. If there are availability problems, you know, that's going to show up in the numbers down the road. That's a good bit of scuttlebutt there.
Yeah. But also, if someone can't get something from, let's say, Boohoo, and they can get something from another site, is that person next time going to go to the other site or back to Boohoo? I mean, is there really any brand loyalty in these brands, which are all basically focused on price?
Yeah, I can't imagine that there's much. You know, I think in an inflationary environment where you want companies that can pass, you know, their cost increases onto their customers through price increases, I just don't see how fast fashion has that in a way that, say, you know, branded consumer goods, the likes of which Procter & Gamble or Unilever sell, or even, you know, luxury goods, which obviously trade on their name and do have very, very, you know, strong brands and strong brand appeal. So I don't see that. I don't see that there is a huge barrier to competition here. There's no money, as it were.
Mm. So it seems like a big headwind for me.
All that said, you know, you mentioned that getting on board a story early is possibly the way to profit from you know, even companies that perhaps, you know, are of lower quality. And so Xandar is potentially that opportunity. And, you know, whereas we've seen the likes of, you know, ASOS and Boohoo struggle this year, so Xandar shares are absolutely flying.
Yeah, they're doing very well. I mean, it's been listed since 2018, but in my opinion, they've never really had a proper swing of the bat. So, I mean, I remember there was outrage when they raised 3 million from an institution. I think the price was 38 pence. I was wondering why they didn't take more, because it was so overvalued. I mean, if you're the CEO of a company, you must know if your stock is overvalued, which at that point you should be selling as much as possible and getting cash in. Because these companies usually raise, you know, at least once a year. They should always be thinking about the raise after the next raise. And what a lot of them do is wait until the share price is on its knees and then raise. But, you know, if you wait until you're desperate, you will only ever get, you know, offers taking advantage of that, which Xandar have done a few times. But recently, they did a raise when they didn't actually need to do a raise. They had a healthy cash position, which suggests that they've learned. Also, the cost of acquisition has halved on lower spend, so it's way more effective, and that's continued through into this year. So the signs are looking good for them. It looks like they've got their issues sorted, the teeth in problems. That said, it's not cheap.
No, when you say it's not cheap, I mean, I don't know really how you tell, because obviously it doesn't make a profit. And without any profits, it's very hard to sort of pin any valuation on it. So I guess we have to look out a few years to kind of when profits are expected to come to get some kind of feel for whether the shares are expensive or not. What is the what's the sort of forecast outlook here? When can we expect it to actually turn a profit?
Yeah, well, Singers has got profits for 2023, adjusted profit before tax, which could be anything because it's adjusted. We'd need to know what it's adjusted for. But 1.4 million and 2.2 in 2024. So even on 2024 numbers, it really isn't cheap. But that said, if it's entering an earnings upgrade cycle, maybe it is. Who knows? But it really is priced quite highly. So if anything were to go wrong, I think that would take a big tank. But what's interesting about Xandar is if you look on the chart, every time the company puts out good numbers, either in line or better than expectations, it sells off, which shouldn't be happening. It suggests that the market's given it was almost expecting more.
I actually think that's a problem generally at the moment in stock markets.
Yeah.
That actually, yeah, you know, unless news is absolutely spectacularly good, companies are getting punished, shares are getting punished.
It seems to be, yeah. It seems like the market is expecting more, and yeah, the numbers come in and it gets sold off.
Yeah, I just struggle to see what they can do that Boohoo and ASOS can't do. So I struggle with that. You know, what makes it a different business? Okay, so it might be going after a slightly different niche, but it's subject to all the same pressures. You know, it operates in much the same way. So why is this one going to be any different? That's what I can't get my head around.
Yeah, well, me neither.
So. It did. I mean, and actually, if you look at it, I mean, ASOS and Boohoo, they are big companies. Big companies. You know, I mean, you know, let's have a look at ASOS's turnover. We're talking nearly £4 billion worth of turnover this year. Boohoo, £1.7 billion worth of turnover for 2021. You know, and we, you know, we look at Sosandar, 12.
Yeah. it's set to rise to 27 in 2022.
I mean, it still feels like a drop in the ocean. Which it is. So you know, my view would be that fast fashion like this, online clothing retail, is a scale game. It's a scale game. You've got to be big. You've got to be doing the volume because you're not making very much money. You know, you need the volume going through it to pay for the infrastructure that supports it. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I would worry that those forecasts are optimistic, that actually it needs so much more scale to make money, much more scale than those forecasts suggest. It feels too small to me.
Yeah, I mean, it also depends where they're getting the customers from. But they have monetized their email list a lot better. But if they're using Facebook ads, or, you know, the prices of those have gone up quite heavily. With e-commerce brands, you need to be constantly switching platforms to get the right spend, because you can't just rely on one platform.
You know, it can be expensive. A customer acquisition is an expensive game. And you know, customer loyalty is a very difficult thing for retailers to achieve. Having said that, I mean, there are some attractions to this market, namely that the move online is a structural shift in how people buy clothes. Having said that, if we go all the way back to PayPal, one of the things they said was that actually they're seeing lower transaction volumes because people are going back into stores. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a funny one. You know, is fast fashion, has it benefited from actually people being stuck at home, and people are now going to go out shopping again with this kind of thing as the world opens up?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, if France is nowhere near as online in the e-commerce business as it is here. So there's a company, Eve Sleep, which sells mattresses online.
I know it well.
Yeah.
I've never bought from them, but there is a...
Wouldn't buy it now, but wait for the placing next year, which I think there could be one, because they'll burn through the market in spend. But maybe we'll come back to that next year. But yeah, they were saying France, they've just not been as good numbers because people are more used to dealing online here, whereas in France it's different, and maybe in Germany it's even more so different.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the other thing we should bear in mind, that everyone should bear in mind when looking at any retailer, whether it's online or on the high street, is that actually, you know, again, the cost of living crisis, which is a real thing, you know, is biting. And, you know, we saw some retail figures from the ONS, from the Office for National Statistics, in December, which were pretty horrific. You know, monthly fall in retail sales. Now, of course, people were stuck at home, but this was Christmas, and you know, it's just a very difficult time for retailers. Very, very difficult time.
And I
think, you know, retailers that cater for the budget conscious market are probably where you want to be right now.
Yeah, well, I would suspect Aldi and Lidl are probably going to pick up more customers. which is exactly what happened in 2008. You know, they'd been here for quite a while, like 20 years or so, but they really didn't gain that much traction until 2008. So we had the big four. You know, they didn't cut prices. In fact, they actually raised them, blamed inflation, which pushed a load of people into the welcoming arms of the German discounters.
Absolutely, including myself. Yeah. Well, it's actually a good experience. You know, that's the other thing. You know, cheap, and extremely cheerful.
I mean, I personally hate Tesco with a passion. I mean, the one in my hometown is just so big. You know, I get like stressed just to even think about going in because you know the one thing that you want is going to be down 10,000 aisles. So it's just much easier to buy everything online.
Yeah, absolutely. So where do you buy your clothes, Michael, if you're buying them online? Where's your...
Lyle and Scott
online?
Lyle and Scott, yeah. I know what size I am, so I just order it. Ultimate laziness.
I didn't have you down for a golfer.
I'm not. I hate golf.
But you like Lyle and Scott.
I do, yeah. It's durable. Lasts a long time.
Sports Direct actually do a nice little line of Lyle and Scott as well.
Yeah, I'll have to check him out. Mike Ashley.
Yeah, he's actually Fraser's group's doing really. Fraser's chairs have done really well this year. It's one I'm gutted I missed that, Bryce, because I've actually been a big fan of that business for quite some time. I kind of didn't buy into the Mike Ashley is evil argument that seems to have put lots of people off of investing in Sports Direct, but as it was known at the time. But I kind of, I've always thought the guy was a shrewd cookie, and it does seem to be playing out that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's bought quite a lot of businesses that have gone bust. I mean, he bought Game, didn't he? I think he bought Game. He bought loads of things. He seems to be single-handedly propping up the high street at the moment.
Well, he believes in the high street. No, I think that's what, it's his mission to actually make sure there is a high street. I think that's a good one. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, the trend we have seen, if you look at the man who believes in the high street and his company, Frasers, and the future of retailers online, fast fashion, I mean, it's telling you a story.
Well, I think there's a place for the high street. I mean, what I can see happening is it becomes more of an experience. So we have VR and AR, and that mixes into high street units. Because online, you can sort of pick your size and you can send it back. But there is no actual customer experience and building of brand loyalty because you're just clicking. So, I can see there being a place for the high street in the future. Just not for me.
No, absolutely. Well, I mean, this is I've written about property companies recently. You know, retail landlords like Hammerson have been absolutely thumped. Mm-hmm. People own shopping centres. But they're shifting. You know, they're shifting their mix. They're focusing on fewer larger centres, as you say, much more experientially driven. And click and collect is a big one as well. I think a lot of retailers, you know, would much prefer to have a retail presence in a shopping centre or a high street, because actually the logistics of mailing stuff out and getting it back, which is where online retailers struggle, it's gone. You know, if it's click and collect, it's on the customer.
Yeah. Well, when there's a company called Shoezone, which I own, very boring company, which sells cheap shoes. But they actually see a lot of their returns go back to the stores because they have a retail presence.
Yeah. So you know, it's saving them a fortune in online returns. I think that's another thing that, you know, these online retailers have got wrong. You know, they needed to do it to seed their markets, to encourage people to shop online. But their customers have become so used to it that they're now too scared to withdraw the free returns. it's extraordinary. When I worked in the city, you know, if everyone had to go to the post office in the morning, in fact, any time of day, but usually the morning, you know, inevitably I'd be stuck behind a queue of young women with piles of ASOS ware to return, piles and piles of it. And I always thought then it was crazy, and I think it's crazy now. I'm not buying any of these. It's the short conclusion. Yourself?
I don't think I'll be buying Sosandar anytime soon. But yeah, shoes own, I own, and maybe we'll own more if the price falls. But yeah, I guess it's not exactly fast fashion. But wait, is it? How long do the shoes last?
Not very long.
Yeah, so maybe it is.
I don't know. I've never actually. Yeah. Oh God, I'm not sure I should admit this on a podcast. I did buy a pair of sandals for a beach holiday. They're still around.
They're
falling apart. So maybe I'm being harsh there, but it's definitely not a shopping experience that I'm that keen to repeat, I have to say.
Yeah, well, me neither, apart from some research, which I've yet to do.
Yeah, well, they've changed their format, haven't they? So they've actually gone more big box as well.
Yeah, so what they can do is basically have less employees and have a bigger store size and sell more range and get cheaper rents as well. So at the moment, they're closing down the leases on the high street and moving to big box, but also growing online as well. So I think it was 20 million in online sales last year, 30 million this year. So it's growing quite quickly. I think it's a decent little business. It's the directors own 50% plus. Mm. The chart's going up, but yeah, it is horrifically liquid. So there is risk there. Yeah, if there's ever a profit one in there, it will be very difficult to get out of just because it's so thinly traded. So I would be careful of that.
But it is, you know, as you've alluded to there, a very well-run business. It's
I hope so.
Well, no, it is. I mean, we've looked at it over the years and, you know, it's never got itself into sort of lease pickles. It's always trying to operate shops on very short lease lengths. So it's, you know, tied into these hideous kind of long-term agreements that retailers get stuck in and end up having to CVA to get out of the lease commitments. I mean, it's not its target shopper, but actually it is one of those businesses aimed at the budget conscious shopper. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, they are going to be in the sweet spot of where we find the economy in the months ahead. Sounds very much like you've got that for a longer term position, Michael.
Well, it's a swing trade. So
okay.
Could be holding this till next year. I mean, hopefully I will be because it keeps going up. But if the trend starts to fall, I will be out no matter how good the company's prospects.
Which
technicals overall.
See, I don't know whether that's long-term trade, long-term investing, long-ish term investing or trading. I'll
hold for as long as it goes up. So if that makes me an investor, then so. Whatever you want to call it.
Absolutely. But then you did some research behind it. So, you know,
I did some fundamental analysis.
I'm calling you an investor on this one.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it's a good investment.
Indeed. Brilliant. Well, Michael, thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Apologies for interrupting your holiday.
So it was a pleasure to speak to you, John.
I assume you've been having a nice time. What's the weather like?
Very nice. Yeah. Yeah, ready to come back to London, which hopefully is not going to be as grey as it has been in recent weeks.
It's been sort of mildish, but it's not equatorial sun, which is which I'm jealous of. Thanks again, Michael. We'll chat again next week.
Yeah, thanks, John. Take care.
You too, and thank you all for listening. If you've got anything you'd like us to talk about, do give us a shout. We want to do more deep dives on, I think, smaller companies, actually. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there that we don't think is particularly well covered. So Sandar has one broker, one analyst covering it. So anything you want us to talk about, do let us know, and we'll do our best to kind of fit that in somewhere. But thanks again for listening, and we'll be back next week. See you soon.